What can you learn from your dinner? Quite a lot, it turns out, especially if you're food writer Andreas Wistad. Andreas sat down for one meal in Italy's capital, and he realized that the elements of that meal, the bread, the salt, the wine, told a story of geography and history, and that there was an education to be had in every bite of pasta. He turned this insight into a book called Dinner in Rome, A History of the World in One Meal. Andreas is a food writer and a longtime cooking show host, and he joins us now to share five big ideas from his book.
My name is Andreas Wistad. I'm a journalist, restaurateur, food activist, and author of Dinner in Rome, A History of the World in One Meal. I'm here to talk about how food is incredibly important and fascinating. The food we eat is not just a pleasurable necessity that gives life flavor. The food we eat has made us who we are today, metaphorically and literally. Food has always been one of the most important driving forces in history. And this is something that I think is often forgotten when history is often told as stories of generals, kings, and great men. Dinner in Rome is about one meal at a particular restaurant, La Carbonara in Campo di Fiori in the middle of Rome. It's one of my favorite places in the world. And during the course of this dinner, I eat a very traditional Italian meal, you know, bread and oil, antipasti, pasta carbonara, grilled lamb. I drink a great local red wine and I enjoy the sour freshness of a lemon sorbet. But more than this, I use these archetypical Italian ingredients and dishes to tell a history of Rome, of the Roman Empire, and of the world. Here are my five insights. Insight number one. There's more history in a bowl of pasta than in the Colosseum or any other historical monument. I'm married to an archaeologist, and when we're in Rome, one of her professional superpowers is evident. She can look at a piece of marble or a broken pillar and then imagine the building that once stood there and help tell the story of the civilization that built it. We can walk around like this for hours, getting lost in the past. And then, after a long day, we sit down for a meal. And finally, we can relax, enjoy great food and wine, free from the never-ending history lesson that is Rome. But are we really free from the past? Gradually, I've started thinking that I can use the same method that my wife uses when studying buildings and artifacts on the food we eat, to study the food and trace it back. I started doing this, and initially, to annoy my wife, I called it culinary archaeology, and the term has stuck. Imagine that bowl of pasta. It can tell a story that is almost limitless. Pasta is, of course, an essential part of Italian culture. The story of how pasta spread from Naples to the rest of Italy in the 19th century is also the story of how Italians started to realize that they might belong to the same nation. The wheat that the pasta is made of is an essential story of the Roman history. The empire wasn't built by generals and emperors, but to a large extent it was a function of the unique food system based on wheat, where the Romans conquered new lands, planted them with wheat if there wasn't wheat there already, and collected the wheat in taxes, which they in turn used to pay as salaries for their ever-expanding army and send back to Rome to ensure that the city's poor didn't riot. And not to go into too much detail here, but the wheat in the pasta can also tell an even bigger story of how humans went from being hunter-gatherers to becoming farmers and then eventually city dwellers with written languages, all because we started growing wheat and we became hooked on it. When I'm in Rome, I love to go and see the Colosseum, but I hope you agree that the story contained in that bowl of pasta is bigger and you can eat it and enjoy it too. Insight number two, we all descend from the first cooks. There is a story of humanity that we've all heard, that humans were the smartest animals and that our smartness is what led us to tame fire and by that to master all the technologies derived from fire. Everything basically, steel, steam engine, iPhone, you name it. But how did we become so smart? In my book, I write about the theory by the primatologist Richard Wrangham, who claims that it wasn't humans but instead early hominins, an ape, roughly speaking, that first started using fire. The use of fire made it possible for us to utilize much more of the energy in the food we ate, and we didn't have to spend all day chewing. And to make a long chain of events shorter, it gave us the supersized brains we have and everything that came after. In the book, I take a detour from Rome, one of many such in the book, and I visit the Wunderwerk cave in South Africa, one of the places where this transformation probably happened and where the oldest traces of controlled use of fire are found, more than 1.2 million years old. So, fire and cooking is what made us human, and that means that we're all descendants of the first cooks. Insight number 3. The mafia got its start with lemons. In the 1860s, Italy had just been unified. In Sicily, that meant that the former rulers and their power structure had collapsed. At the same time, the island had just introduced a new commodity on the world market, the lemon. There was a craze for lemons, first on mainland Italy, then pretty quickly in a lot of other European countries, and then the United States and the rest of the world. Growing and trading lemons was by far the most lucrative agricultural activity. The lemon groves of Sicily were even more profitable than the most prestigious vineyards of Burgundy and Bordeaux. And as early as the 1870s, there were reports of a new organization that controlled the production and trade of lemons. They didn't grow lemons, they didn't own the orchard or the transport. They had stepped in for the old dons and ran extortion schemes and demanded protection money to ensure that there were no accidents. And as the historian John Dickey has written extensively about, the organization soon spread to the United States, where they expanded their business. In fact, the first shipments of drugs were smuggled in lemon crates. Think about that the next time you have a glass of lemonade. Insight number 4. Taste is important. Often when food is mentioned in the telling of history, it tends to be seen as a function of its calories only, as this functional thing compared to petrol or building blocks. When food is lacking, it can lead to famine and disaster. But that's not all, not by far. History shows us that we humans care a lot about taste, and that once we have enough to fill our bellies, we're willing to go to extremes to ensure that the food tastes good. The most vivid example of this is our relationship with spices. 2,000 years back, the Romans were obsessed with spices. One of the oldest cookbooks in the world, that's ascribed to the Roman nobleman Apicius, De Re Cocina, mentions pepper 468 times. There's pepper in nearly everything. And by that I mean not only Roman staples such as sausages, shellfish sauce, salad, brain pudding and meats, but also in wine and desserts. You might have heard that the ancients used pepper and other spices for medicinal purposes, or that it was supposed to mask spoilt meat. But that's just a load of, well, it's simply not true. They liked pepper for the same reasons we grind it over our steak or our piece of chicken. Because it makes the food more interesting. And the hunger for spices was so great that it changed the world. The search for a route to the spice-producing areas in and around India led to the age of exploration in the 15th century. When Columbus ventured west, it was in search of the spices of India. And when he didn't find pepper, he was rather disappointed, and he named more or less everything he found pepper. Allspice was Jamaica pepper, and it was claimed that the red hot chilies of the Americas were chili peppers. Insight number 5. The universe has a center. If you've been to Rome, you're lucky. If you haven't, you're even more lucky, because then you have a wonderful, life-changing experience ahead of you. In the middle of Campo di Fiori, where my meal in the book Dinner in Rome takes place, there's a statue of the 16th century scientist Giordano Bruno. Bruno was one of the proponents of the Copernican model. This was the idea that the stars were not merely things drawn on the firmament to give us something to look at, but that they were suns just like our own. He claimed that space was immense and that the sun didn't circle around the earth, but that it was the other way around. The problem with this theory in the 16th century was the implication. It meant that God was not all-powerful. The stories in the Bible were not facts to be taken literally, and the words of the papal church were not infallible. Bruno was prosecuted as a heretic and burned at the stake in this square on February 17, 1600. History has been harsh on Bruno's judges and the executioners who tied him to the stake with his head down and legs up, then set fire to him and let him burn. Today, he's considered a hero, and most of his claims are widely accepted. They're now a part of our collective worldview. I spent a lot of time in Campo de' Fiori looking at the statue of Bruno, and I've been inspired by his challenge to look at the world from a new perspective. In my case, I want to look at the way we explore the role of food in history. That's one of the driving forces in my book. But he was wrong about one thing. If you spend an evening at the restaurant La Carbonara, and then, after bread and oil, an artichoke as antipasti, pasta carbonara with just the right amount of pepper, some grilled lamb, a lemon sorbet, and then some red wine, maybe even one glass too much, and then you step into the mild night in the Eternal City, filled with history, surrounded by history, then you know that the universe has a center, and that it is here, at Rome's Campo di Fiori. I'm Andreas Wiesda, and my book is Dinner in Rome, A History of the World in One Meal. Thank you for listening. Stay curious and hungry.
Thank you, Andreas. That was Andreas Wiestad with five big ideas from Dinner in Rome, A History of the World in One Meal. If you enjoyed that look at where food comes from, maybe you'd like to know more about where it's going. Check out our book bite for The Fate of Food, What We'll Eat in a Bigger, Hotter, Smarter World by Amanda Little. I'm Michael Kovnat. Have a delicious day.